My name is Tia Kantsara. I'm an ecosystem designer.
You're here for the Open State Conference or festival. So tell us something about what we'll hear from you.
You're definitely going to hear a little bit more about Replenish Earth. It's an index, the World Replenish Index, something that I've been working on for the past 4 years. And as far as the actual company goes, because I'm a real big fan of putting academic research into practice, sometimes I feel that there is incredible research, but it just doesn't see the light of day. It often finds itself in journal articles that, you know, are paid for access, or they're in innovations perhaps that governments or medical institutes have paid a lot of money to have access to and the IP for. So it's really nice to have research that then finds itself into either the built environment or into practical opportunities. And that's what you're going to be hearing from me. My architectural practice is about 10 years old now, and that's in partnership with Rod Hackney. And then there is this new firm called Replenish Earth Limited, which I started in November, but actually goes back about 4 years when I was sort of coming to terms with the environmental crisis that we have, climate science, and I'm really appreciating that this is more of a behavioral challenge, a practical product and service challenge, just as much as it is a scientific research application to the built environment.
So when you say coming to terms with the climate crisis, what does that actually mean for you?
Climate science is a really interesting scientific study on the impact that both anthropogenically or human-related impacts on the environment, but there are also just shifts and changes in our climate. And coming to terms and coming to realize more about that, I came across Jeffrey Sachs. He's a professor at Columbia University, and he runs the Earth Institute. He's done a formidable amount of research on climate change. And his research on this sustainable development network, which is a course that I took whilst I was at university doing my PhD. And it's that understanding of the actual impact of this science, if it were to happen, if it does occur and the Earth is warming up, then what are the actual implications to us on an individual level? So there is this planetary change that is occurring, whether we like it or not, whether we accept it or not, whether we're doubtful of it or not, it's happening. What can we do to prepare for it and prevent some of the disasters that could occur if we could actually change the way that we acted? And by those actions, I mean certain purchases that we had, certain activities that we partake in, and certain behavioral situations and changes that could actually occur only because we're feeling much more clued on to that global impact. So it's really about that local action that then has that global impact.
Tell us about this concept of Replenish Earth, because I can hear that there's optimism, there's hope, there's a vision for the future that is not just a reaction of despair.
Actually, funnily enough, it actually comes from a point of despair. It comes from that feeling that I don't know what I can do. And it's from that situation where buildings and cities are designed in such a manner that sometimes they feel like they're really disassociated to the people that are living there. You get this sort of building that is designed by an architect, and it's a beautiful building, but operationally, it's awful. Or, you know, when people are actually living there, it's really difficult for them to realize and feel comfortable with what is happening and how it is happening inside the building. It's maintained in a way that operationally should be perfect, but then people who are, you know, working or living there feel miserable in it. It's from that, and it's also from a recognition that if we were to go into much more of the well-being, productivity assessments of people inside these buildings, we'd find that they're not satisfied with them. They work in them because they have to. They get ill from these buildings that occurs from ventilation, the actual dampness inside the actual ventilation system. So there are many things that are happening in the built environment that then allow us to recognize that we have choices. Replenish Earth is really that sort of counterbalance. I feel that it has to be easy for people to shift and transition to this carbon neutral lifestyle. And I'm going to challenge what carbon neutral actually really means. But I realize that people need to feel that they have a larger relationship with both their community, perhaps even their city and their state. So how does one activity that I have created give more than it's actually taking? So instead of just neutralizing my impact, I want to do an even more positive action. But what are they? How do you calculate that? And this is what I call replenishing planet Earth, giving more than you're taking and living also in harmony with the nature that surrounds you in the climate that you're in, but something that's appropriate to that climate. How do you live in harmony with that climate? And how do you create actions and businesses that surround that one philosophy? And it is, I think, deeply rooted into that philosophical shift. Where do we move from where we are living right now, how we're living right now, to a way that can be much more positive to the environment? So it's really just being mindful, and it's being creative with the kind of curiosity that we should have in transitioning to either carbon neutral or beyond.
So how then does that relate to architecture and cities? Because that's the area that you're focusing in on.
Replenish relates to that because replenish is the philosophy upon which that physical environment is created. It's a platform. Cities and buildings are platforms. And so if we lead with the questions of creating a bigger sequestration than the actual CO2 that we've spent, or we actually think in terms of developing and designing physical manifestations of that philosophy, that's where the city actually really does come into view. Because a city and the way that we live every single day, from the time that I wake up in my room to the place that I go to, where I live and where I work and where I go to hang out in the evening, all has some level of relationship with the lifestyle that I would like to live.
With Open State, because you're going to be speaking at a number of venues, you're also actually being part of the Children's University, you know, with the idea that children can grasp these ideas and take them as they grow up. So can you tell us something about that?
I'm really grateful for the opportunity to have some time with children because they remind me of play. And I think when you're playing, you're relaxed, you have better thoughts, you're much more creative, you think outside of the box because there is no box. And, you know, there is so much more that you can do that comes from children. I feel, A, for myself, to appreciate what the challenges are for children and to prepare them, you know, not only for what is coming and to see it as a potential opportunity rather than something that is a negative. You know, I'm keen to know what the students have in store for me just as much as I have as suggestions for what they can, you know, almost vision for the future that they want to kind of live. I'd be curious to know what kind of challenges they have. And I remember this disaster reconstruction project that we did with the UN in Hue in Vietnam, and the students had created this 10-point disaster prevention plan with a local charity. And what had happened was the children actually went to the home and described this to their parents. They'd shown how you could disaster-proof your home. And originally, when the inhabitants of Hue were introduced to this, they didn't want to shift their homes. They had a very specific method of their lifestyle. They didn't want to change the way that they were living. But the children came in and taught their parents how to do it. And there were so many incredible examples where the children were actually teaching their parents. And there was this almost reverse of that educational piece that I think sometimes even it just misses us, because as parents, I think we tend to focus on certain things at the cost of missing out on others. So the kind of collaborative education between the children and the parents was really interesting in Hue. But I'm also quite interested to know what kind of collaborative education there could occur from that one little lecture that I'll be giving.
All right, then. Can you just give us some overviews of various things that, you know, you have been involved in across the world?
I think the translation of replenish into A, different countries, B, different sectors is really interesting. In, for example, a university in India, the Centre of Environment Planning and Technology, one of the things that I really enjoyed doing was challenging the students on what it means to be smart. And there is a lot of conversation about smart cities, smart buildings, smart everything, but smart citizens. And so all of a sudden it's, you know, this digitization of the city without an appreciation for the cultural shifts that are required in the actual population to appreciate that digital shift. Everything is going to be a sort of internet of things. Everything's going to be connected. All of these sensors are going to be there. But what is it that represents my responsibility as a citizen, say, of Adelaide? So looking specifically at behavioural shifts in the students was really interesting. And that then led on to a second course that I ended up doing, but taking the students to Japan, where many of the students recognize that there is a huge crisis on waste in the city, in all of their cities in India. There isn't yet a waste-free city that I've come across in India. But I think it's really interesting that, say, in Shimla, there has been no plastic, sort of like a ban on plastics, or there have been smaller initiatives. But in regards to the actual waste and the segregation, many of the students know that there is an issue of waste. There are, if you were to walk down the main street, at least four or five different informal landfill sites. And it's so bizarre to walk down a street and see that there are piles and piles of rubbish on the street. I mean, for many of the local people, this is it's a regular occurrence, and they completely forget about it. It's like a blind spot in a car. You know that it's there, but it's not important. And so when I took the students to Japan, one of the things that I offered to them was a stay in a Japanese home. And they got to realize how difficult it was to be in a Japanese home because they had to segregate all of their waste. And they'd never done that before. And their students come from all over India, but they'd never segregated their waste. And so this was a great education for them, but it was an immersive educational experience. There's nothing that teaching them in a classroom from a textbook could have shown them in comparison to the actual opportunity to live in a Japanese home with a Japanese family and appreciate what it means to segregate your waste and how that then relates to the larger context within the actual city. So then, you know, one of our trips was to go and visit a recycle center and what is then done with, you know, the 15 to 32 different kinds of recycling that occurs. So the educational pieces are really fun. Then the commercial projects are really interesting because Replenish has been translated into a business model, business canvas, where you get to ask the questions when you're a startup, you're an entrepreneur, and you're thinking, how do I create a mark in this one particular industry? And many of the questions, many of the issues, many of the environmental challenges that companies face are often ignored till the end. And because there isn't a government policy on banning certain plastics and materials, companies and businesses and entrepreneurs will tend to use these without much concern because it isn't an obvious cost to the business. It isn't an obvious legal requirement for the business. So it will just go largely sort of forgotten. What ends up happening then is how do you question the business right at the beginning instead of right at the end, right at the beginning and encourage entrepreneurs to look at innovations beyond what they're thinking. So it's not just, hey, we're going to use this plastic or we're going to use this piece of research. It's we're going to use this piece of research and we're also going to create an alternative structure. We're actually going to challenge what is happening right now and see which alternative materials we can use, which one is going to have the least environmental impact, which one is going to be cost effective. We are running a business, we are going to be making money. And so businesses and their supply chains are really fascinating for us as well. Governments as well have been working quite strongly with us. And there are multiple challenges across the world that are now popping up. For example, flood proofing. All along the Thames, we're getting all sorts of really interesting projects that are there to raise the awareness of if the water level sort of rises in the Thames, we do get some flooding, especially in the estuary. And so some of the research that has been going into the House of Lords, for example, with the work of Andrew Stone, Lord Andrew Stone, is really how do you create that flood proofing? What kind of biological or even environmental sort of plants that you could use to create those sort of flood barriers? So it's, I think the translation of biomimicry, the translation of the environment into business or the environment into really good solutions is fascinating for us.